I've chose is the logic and sustainability of vertical programs now. And it's something that I've been concerned about over the years. My friendship with Jim Grant led to a very intense running debate with Jim over, I think, at least 25 years over this issue. And so the thing was precipitated, really, the Warren Walsh article in 1979 that started the shift away from comprehensive primary health care from the Alma-Ata experience to the selective primary health care and the polarization that happened from that point on. Jim was the one in 1984 at the watershed meeting in UNICEF that pushed Gobi FFF that became the lead for the vertical program since that time. Jim persuaded me to take the responsibility of the UNICEF country representative in China when I became emeritus professor at Hopkins. And we had marvelous discussions. I can remember particularly an overnight train ride from Chengdu to Xi'an. And he kept coming back to the idea that the reason for vertical programs was so we could pick the low-hanging fruit. And that phrase represents the fact that he recognized something that was originally recognized in the Warren Walsh article, which you will notice the title was An Interim Strategy for Developing Countries. And that is something that we've forgotten, because right from the beginning it was clear that that was going to be something that resulted in this false polarization that we've had and the tremendous wasted energy. And so we have what I call the straw man fallacy. There's a Greek allegory of the troops that used to beat on straw men created by themselves in order to get their violence out of their system. This is what we have done in this particular polarization over the years. So Richard Jolly and I published a paper in 1988 at the height of this polarization, in which we talked about the battle between selective and comprehensive. It's a fake battle, but it's very self-satisfying. Both sides have slogans, banners, repeat the same arguments. They deliberately are distorting the other side's positions in the debate. And so what we tried to show is that we ought to be working together. We said right from the beginning that in the Alma-Ata Declaration, in the background documents, we had detailed discussions of the need for vertical programs to take care of the low-hanging fruit. And this was clear right from the beginning. And so we go over the same arguments, and so we can now look back and talk about what some of the dilemmas that have arisen for the vertical programs. The reality is that eventually any vertical program has to be integrated to the sustainable health system in the country. And therefore, it should be recognized that maybe we should start doing that. And each vertical program has its own infrastructure. And as a result of building duplicate infrastructures in countries, we've made the comprehensive primary health care system weak and unsustainable. And so in the mid-1980s, when Jim was at the peak of the State of the World Children Reports, I took the data from one of the annual reports where they told about what they were going to achieve with each vertical intervention. And I added it up, and then I showed Jim that it was 160% of all the deaths. And that's what we saw in some of the articles that the reviews that Henry cited talk about the same thing. When you begin to add up all of those vertical claims, it goes way over what's possible. And so when I pointed this out to Jim, he just said, oh, it's that interaction effect that you've been writing about all these years with the synergism between the infections and malnutrition. And so we look at what are some of the tensions now. This whole issue of vertical versus horizontal. We need a balance. We need to know what the sequence is. The whole issue of top-down officials versus bottom-up community. We need to recognize, and we've learned, that we also need three partners involved here, top-down, bottom-up, and then the outside-in specialist who do the training and the research in order to produce the three-way partnership. And then they support the people so that they have a sense of ownership. Then the whole issue of planned versus participatory. We need both, again, in local balance. The whole issue of technological magic bullet versus the integrated packages. Again, we need a balance and in the right sequence.
Computers are a little slow, I guess you've noticed in the other session.
Okay. This is a UNICEF slide showing the causes of death in a major international recognition. And the thing that appeals to me in this slide is the largest section there is other. And when I saw this with Laura Caulfield presenting it, I went up to her afterward and said, I have a name for your other, and it's synergism, which is what we've been talking about all these years. And it's something that we need to begin to look at in more systematic ways. And so my explanation of the other is that a rigorous review of the evidence has narrowed the claims of the vertical programs because they are done in a systematic clinical trial environment, which is very different from the way in which programs are really done in the systems that when you get into the health services. And so we recognize that synergism is important in nutrition and infections, but it's important in everything, and that's what we really need to learn how to measure, and there are so many fascinating questions that we just don't know yet. And so one of the things that we've recognized is the importance of bias and the way in which scientists talk about that. So when you do community-based primary health care, you get the people involved in data gathering and interpretation. And so that's always considered to be a problem because the subject should not be involved in the way the research is analyzed or done because that's supposed to cause bias. We know that community health workers typically provide 80 to 90% of all services. And then we know that many programs were vertical, which was appropriate at the beginning, but we could have been doing community-based primary health care in a way that built that into the relationship, and we've not done that. And now most of the money is still going into the vertical programs. It's simple to measure. But we can move on now in order to look at the way in which the randomized control studies can really look at in a way that begins to measure some of the things that are important in bias. We go back to Jumcade and the drop that occurred. There's been great skepticism about the credibility because it was the VHWs that were collecting the data. And how could they not be biased? But when you go there and walk in the villages with those workers, you know that there's nobody who is doing more precise reporting than those women in Jumcade, because they take pride in their accuracy and they really know what is going on. They know that their data are being used. So the question I end up with as I look at this situation, this whole experience, is what would Jim Grant say now if he were here with us at the present time about the balance between vertical and community-based? And in talking with Jim over the years, he kept saying, what would my dad, John Grant, say now? Because his dad was the father of primary health care. The Ding Xian Project was the first reported project in the world, which was in China, done by John Grant. And so we used to talk about that, and it's time to ask the same question about Jim, who was the main advocate of vertical programs in the 1980s, but we're now 2007. Isn't it time that we really do begin to bring the two together? And when Horton suggested a revival of the child survival revolution, he said maybe we should go back to vertical programs. But the question now is, if Jim actually, in our review, an important issue, I think, is to see what Jim did write about when would be the right time to do community-type activities and make that the balanced relationship. And this fascinating thing to me is the renewal of interest in Naringwa. This was my most intense learning experience, where we had two field trials, one on the interaction of nutrition and infections, and then on integration of MCH and family planning. And we had clusters of villages in which we had independent single interventions, nutrition and infections, and then the combined the two interventions. And so we were amazed last spring that somebody remembered Naringwa. In fact, it was the Cochrane Review that raised questions about the validity of our randomization and whether you needed to pay any attention to our data. And so we then had, 2 months later, the Indian Journal of Bioethics published a critique of the ethics. And the fact that we had any controls at all was the issue in that journal article. And it was just marvelous to have somebody pay attention to what we had said at that time. So now we are having a process with the Cochrane Review going back all of our own data. The Indian Journal of Bioethics has agreed now to publish our response to the ethical criteria at that time. So it's great to have this chance to clarify that. And I won't spend time now, I need to wind up, but what we've done with our panel, the priorities, get there, I will just run through these. These are some of the priority issues that our panel says that they want to look at. The whole issue of community empowerment and how we can begin to look at that systematically. The issue of the indicators that we can use. There are ones that are being used now. How can they be improved? And the community health worker, support and training, supervision, the whole issue. And then the organizational and social political factors. And then the questions that come out of this listing now from our members of the review panel is scaling up on technical interventions, behavior change, community empowerment, how to promote integration of the packaging, what should be financed by government, and how to mobilize the community, and how to institutionalize the community-based primary health care. And then one of the big questions we're now saying, how to get at all of these complexities and put them together in one policy document. And at that point, I will call on Rudy Nippenberg to really answer all of these questions that we're raising, because representing UNICEF, he is going to tell what the response really is of the big agencies as they are now looking at this kind of activity in a serious way. And it's really serious.